You know, a while back in a party, I was in a conversation with a group of mid to late 20-year-olds. There were all sorts of groups standing around, eating, talking, you know, drinking. And our conversation had gone on for quite a while when one of the men looked around and he started his comment with, "You know, I have been thinking." He wanted to say, "Season's greetings. You know, it's not Christmas time, it's summertime. Most people think of it as a Christmas thing, but it doesn't have to be. It's 90 degrees outside. Summer is a season. So if I say season's greetings, it has nothing to do with that. I'm thinking about using it as a normal, everyday greeting." His wife, looking alarmed, immediately said, "No, please don't." Realizing I was almost 30 years older than everybody else in this conversation with me, and that I could use my wisdom to defuse the situation, I looked right at him and said, "I think that's a wonderful idea. Maybe you should start, and maybe we should start reminding you to do this. We could make it our group thing to remind you to do this." Meanwhile, his wife has this horrified look on her face. "You know, we could make it your family catchphrase. You've known everywhere as the season's greetings guy." His wife again said no. I looked at her and said, "Wait, this could be your family thing. People who you know because of people they know could look at you and go, 'Ah, season's greetings.' It could be your family catchphrase, kind of like 'Where's the beef?' or, you know." She looked at me and replied, "Mr. Houck, please stop." Again, seeing the look on her face, I realized something. I thought he was joking. And he might have been. But she wasn't certain. You know, my whole bit had been built on relying on the fact that this was a joke. If he was serious, then what was I doing? I was giving horrible advice. And I was also torturing his wife. At that point, we moved on because when she asked me to please stop, I actually did stop. I was at least that wise. And we talked about all sorts of things, everything from sports and fantasy football to biblical topics. It was a church group. I'm happy to say I now know the husband was not serious. But what if he had been? Again, I would have been guilty of giving him bad advice. And giving it to him knowing it was bad advice. Thinking of the situation led me to again realize I need to learn to control my mouth better. Especially when I'm trying to be funny. Please turn to Titus 2:2. And when you get there, put a marker there because we'll be in and out of Titus 2 multiple times. The title for today's message is Understanding the Man in Titus 2:2. You know, this whole book is directed to ministerial instruction. But it has important instruction for all of us. You know, the heading in my Bible here for Titus 2 has always felt spot on to me. Qualities of a Healthy Church. Here Paul tells Titus what to focus his preaching on. Starting in verse 1 through 8, we can hear basically what a healthy church needs. But let's just start in verse 1 because I'm sure Will doesn't mind if I run 20 or 30 minutes long. Well, I got thumbs up. Good. verse 1, but as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. So Paul's telling him these things that you're going to speak on have to do with sound doctrine. That older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, and in patience. The older women, likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanders, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. Then in 4 and 5, we go into, you know, younger women. But you know what? I'm not going to run long and try to make Will cut his message. So we'll jump to Titus 2:7. In all things, showing yourself, Titus, this at this point is supposed to do this. In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed and have nothing evil to say to you. Now, while Titus is being told to have those qualities, we should all also have those qualities. That's why I jump from one to the next. So we're going today examine what to me is the most important verse in this whole passage. Verse 2, and how older men should act. Now, I say to me this is the most important verse because I'm no longer young. My son Joshua recently told me I'm old. I said, I'm feeling old today. He said, that's because you are. You know? So I'm no longer a young man. I will have never been a young woman. I will never be an older woman. But I am an old man at this point, apparently. We'll look first at both Webster's and biblical definitions of these words in Titus 2:2, and what they say about how the men should act. Secondly, why it's important to uphold these requirements. So looking at verse 2, that older men be sober. Today, most people look at this word and they think you shouldn't drink too much. And yes, that is one of the meanings of the word, but not here. If this was all this word meant, down where it tells the older ladies that they should not be drink given to much wine, it would say basically the same thing. In places like 1 Thessalonians 5:6, this is what sober means. You know, not to drink excessively. Here in Titus, the word for sober, nephalias, I might have said that right, chances are I didn't say it right, means circumspect or vigilant. Another word for circumspect is wary. Vigilant is to watch out for danger or difficulties. It can also mean of a sound mind. Please turn to Timothy 3. I think it's 1 Timothy 3, but I did not bother to mark that down, so let's make sure. Yes, 1 Timothy 3:8. It's interesting that this need to be sober is stated as a requirement for elders and deacons. Deacons are required to be sober, though here in Timothy, it is talking about not drinking to excess. On the other hand, here their wives are told to be sober, which means the same thing as wary and circumspect. But here in Titus 2, the word means circumspect or vigilant. The second requirement of older men is to be grave. Grave. This word comes from the King James Version and is translated reverent in the New King James. Most of the time makes someone picture somebody who has a really sad or serious look. You picture a funeral director. You know, someone very sober, somber, grave, sad. Here, the word means venerable or respected, or again, honest. And it's again found in Timothy 3 as both a need for deacons and their wives. Makes sense, because what's a deacon's duty? Deacon's there to make sure everybody else has what they need. And if you didn't respect a deacon or didn't respect, think if somebody was honest, would you come to them for what you need? It's impossible to serve if you don't have this. People think about you this way, because that is what a deacon is. He's a servant. Third word here in Titus 2:2 is to be temperate. In this case, what the Bible is saying is we need to be self-controlled. Moderate in opinion, moderate in passion. Bible is not saying we don't have opinions and we aren't passionate. It's just they're controlled. You don't go around exploding, yelling about something that has happened, throwing a fit because someone doesn't agree with what you think, telling them that opinion is the worst possible thing. I can't believe that I can't even stand around you if you think that. That's not temperate. We'll never change someone's thoughts by looking at them and going, you're just horrible. Yeah. There are people who actually think that by saying that you're the worst person ever, you're going to change their thoughts. Not just older men, but all Christians. We all need that self-control. To express our opinions properly, we need to have self-control. In Galatians 5:23, self-control is listed as one of the fruits of the Spirit. Outbursts of wrath is one of the works of the flesh. Here in Corinthians, we see we are required to be temperate. So let's turn to 1 Corinthians 9:25. Because, like I said, you can't change anyone's opinion of anything by looking at them and saying, just losing your temper. 1 Corinthians 9:25. And anyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, the racers are talking about. But we for an imperishable crown. It's required of all of us. It's just stated as one of the requirements of older men here. But honestly, any of the requirements in Titus 2, our requirements we should all be working towards. Going back to Titus 2:2, the fourth requirement is to be sound. The word sound simply means either healthy or uncorrupt, is connected here with the last three words we're going to look at: faith, charity, and patience. So what we're looking at is someone who should be living their life with a sound faith, understanding what they believe, and not easily moved off the truth. Someone who's charitable, out there helping other people, and patient with all those around them. Again, so let's put all those concepts together. Paul is saying older men should be watchful for dangers that could harm those around them. Be honest, respected, because of age, wisdom, or character. Be someone who is known to be self-controlled, unlikely to explode in anger, unlikely to react violently, either verbally or physically. But someone who's sound in faith, someone you can come to when you have questions, and they're not necessarily going to have the answer to your question, but chances are if you come to them and ask them, they'll try to find it and bring it back to you. Who knows what they believe and knows why they believe it? Who's known to show charity or to be watching out for the congregation and patience with those around them? Because let's face it, family is hard to keep, to be patient with, because you're with them all the time. And what are we other than family? That was the what of Titus 2:2. Now we come to the why of our topic. The reason why is so important for us and necessary for us to try and to model the people in Titus 2. I say try because look how I'm supposed to act. Yeah. So we're looking at someone who should be living their life with sound faith, be charitable, be patient with those around them. There we go. Known for self-control, unlikely to explode, be watchful of dangers or harm for those around them, be honest, respect because of age, wisdom, or character. I'm not there yet. And even in times when I think I've got some of them, then I fall back off. I act like a goof sometimes. I speak carelessly, trying to be funny. Sometimes I'm not attentive to others' needs because I'm wound up in my own head. Sometimes I lose my temper. Why is it a big deal? Because you never know who's watching you. Because older men are supposed to be showing younger generations, especially younger men, the way to live. To be a guide and example on how to live. And we don't want to be the example that's, you know, you don't want to be that signpost that's stuck out in the weeds and people are saying, don't go there. Yeah. Other than living God's life, the biggest duties fathers have is giving and teaching God's way to our children. Please turn to Deuteronomy 4:9. Now, here in Deuteronomy 4, verse 9, it could be some of you are thinking, Mike, my children are your age. In guiding their children's path, my children are guiding their children. What do I have left to teach? Deuteronomy 4:9. Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and to your grandchildren. You know, our responsibilities of how we're acting don't just end with our children. It carries on to our grandchildren. Places like Deuteronomy 6:7, we're told to both teach and talk of God's way. I'll just read it to you. You should teach them diligently to your children and talk of them sit in your house and when you walk by the way and you lie down and when you rise up. You know, grandparents have a special ability to connect with their grandchildren because you don't have quite the same authority issues that you have with your children. Grandparents can guide gently and inspire. It's an unfortunate truth that our bodies wear out and we are no longer able to physically lead and guide like we used to. Maybe we get to the point where we're just tired. I understand being tired. It could be you look around the congregation here and you think, old men, old women, not many young people. Mike, who am I guiding? Another question that answers that first one. Do you ever wonder why the men who from Chicago come up and speak to you and are so happy to do it? You know, because I think of my time here as a gift. I really do. The people of this congregation have been teaching and guiding my way for decades. Last time I was here, Galen spoke behind me. He wasn't on the schedule. He had been in a hospital that Friday and under general anesthesia. but rather in canceled services when our other speaker didn't show up. He put together a message. He didn't have strength, but he spoke with power. I think about the Morrisons, the Blacks, the Nimitzes, the rest of you. You're still teaching me. This congregation lives the concept of hold fast. You persevere. Your endurance speaks for you. One of our younger speakers told me once, there's nothing quite as inspiring or humbling as a 90-year-old woman who has more energy and push than you do. And I really wish she was here so I could give her a hug. As this world gets uglier and uglier, hold fast is a vital lesson. Matthew 24 speaks to the end times of the ugliness that will be here, but also gives hope. 24:13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. I come here and I see you gathering and I'm inspired. The danger in Titus 2 is if the old men are not following this way, are not watchful, watching out for the dangers that can harm those around them, not honest or respected because of their age, their wisdom, or their character, not someone who is known to be self-controlled, someone who's unlikely to respond with an explosion of anger, not someone who's sound in faith that you can go and talk to, who knows what they believe and why they believe it, who is known to show charity and patience to those around them. Because someone like that is going to cause doubt to appear, cause youth to question that they are in the proper path. There's a danger to everyone involved. Please turn to Matthew 18:6. Whoever causes one of these little ones to believe in me to sin, it would be better if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. It's easy for us to lose our way. I've lost so many friends. Who would have said were better grounded than I was? It's why the ones I still have are so important. I lost them to a path that seemed easier at the time. A little farther down Matthew 18, Christ speaks of lost sheep. I look forward to some of them coming back. As an older man, and yes, for those that are older women, it's our duty to work to live up to the words in Titus 2, to be an example to those who are younger than us, even as they will be an example to the ones who are younger than them. We need to realize we are an example to those, whether we try to be or not, either a positive example or a negative one. In my case, a bit of both. That we need to take care to avoid actions or words that can cause harm to others. Just as importantly, take time to consider what kind of fruits we are showing. To be attentive to the fact that our actions as an example on the path to those around us, both those who are the same age of us and especially to those who are younger, they need to walk a path that's going to be more difficult than what we walked. Are words and actions leading towards the fruits of the Spirit or the works of the flesh? Titus 2 gives us a blueprint of the people we need to be striving to be. The people we need to be. It's hard work. But one thing I remember from growing up is that even when tired, you know, you've always pushed forward. I hope I can hold the spirit of striving towards God's way in my heart. It's not something that's solely a Beloit thing, but I did learn it first here. Happy Sabbath, brethren.